Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. By the way, those of you who were listening to our last segment, we have a link for listeners who want to learn more about João Silva's recovery. That is João Silva, which is joaosilva.photoshelter.com. Once again, that's João Silva, joaosilva.photoshelter.com. So you can follow his recovery there. A little later this hour, we'll be taking your phone calls about vacation rentals. If you have rented out your home through Craigslist or Airbnb or through Couchsurfing, we'd like to hear your stories about how that's worked out. Pro con, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll be taking your calls on that in about 15 minutes. But first, how come Hong Kong subway system can offer its CEO $1 million while New York's takes on more and more debt just to stay above water? That's the subway system, not the CEO. When Jay Walder announced he was leaving the MTA, he told associates the offer was too good to turn out. Not only did his offer to go to Hong Kong include a big salary hike for a man already making a pretty comfortable living, but it gave him the chance to preside over a system that is growing, not cutting. Hong Kong's transit system owns real estate, shopping malls, and comparatively speaking, it is rolling in money. But is that an idea that could be imported to New York? Regional Plan Association senior fellow Alex Marshall says yes. So let's tease that out. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Alex, break it down for us. How does Hong Kong's system work?
Well, the really interesting thing about the Hong Kong system is that it makes money. And a big way they make money is by real estate development. They not only act as a runner of trains, they act as a runner and owner of shopping malls and office buildings and apartment buildings. And, they own and run these things for profit. And that generates a huge amount of revenue for the transit system. And it's a wonderful model in a lot of ways, and so it's something that I think that we should look at.
Now, it's not just random shopping malls, right? I mean, they own the shopping malls that are along the transit lines.
Yeah, they own the malls, 12 shopping malls that are around the stations. And if you think about it, transportation is a huge moneymaker. If you take the larger view, the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, they make billions of dollars for the city and the region, or hundreds of billions of dollars, because why is the Chrysler Building next to Grand Central Station? Why is Macy's next to Penn Station? Because it's an incredibly good location. And the only reason these giant buildings can exist is because they have these transit lines underneath them that can pump thousands of workers and shoppers into them without carrying cars. And so the region really depends on the transit lines. The whole economy does. But the trick is to somehow, it's kind of a paradox right now. The economy in some ways is doing well, but the MTA is suffering. So how do you harness some of that incredible wealth to actually make the transit system healthy, which is, after all, generating that wealth?
Well, I think the economy is suffering, isn't it?
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, that, there's been over the years, and one hopes will be all kinds of wealth, gained from the construction of the transit system. But, I'm wondering, Hong Kong system, as I understand it, there's a lot of sort of new transit lines that were built.
Yeah.
And I think that the sort of effect of transit lines and their effect on sort of immediate revenue is somewhat, New York's system is built out, so there's not the possibility, except maybe in cases like the Second Avenue subway, where you can build a shopping mall there and immediately reap profit.
Well, that's true. The Hong Kong is a new line, a new system. It only started in 1979. And they took the good step of actually planning this from the beginning, of owning a lot of the land around the stations, and then developing like that from the start. But there can be opportunities here. I mean, you know, we have Atlantic Yards here in Brooklyn and the Hudson Yards. There is the Second Avenue subway. And I think there's also there can be kind of day-to-day opportunities, ones that aren't quite so gigantic, but things about just, you know, maybe having more development actually within subway stations. There are also several ways to kind of skin this cat. I mean, in addition to kind of direct ownership of like a shopping mall, you could have joint partnerships, have value-added taxes around stations that try to capture some of this wealth.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, very specifically, in the case of the Second Avenue subway, which, you know, if God willing, it will be completed someday. How would the MTA go about structuring this so that it could reap some of the economic activity that eventually will come from having all these additional subway stations?
Well, they want to look for development opportunities as they plan the lines.
So what? So they would buy the land?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe they could or approach property owners about joint developments. I mean, there needs to be an understanding that you know, a lot of this development would not happen without the Second Avenue subway. And there are choices. There are choices about where to put entrances and. I mean, I think the location of the stations is pretty set, but there still are choices, and you know, and there also could be things like special property tax districts right around the station to capture some of this wealth in that way. And the MTA is
that you know, sounds. Yeah. Forgive me, but you know, mm-hmm. given sort of, I mean, the basic sort of narrative line that we've had about the Second Avenue subway is how hard it's making things for business owners. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
For the MTA to go in and say, okay, we're going to tax you more, it just seems like it would send people through the roof.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't start taxing them until the subway opens. I wouldn't start taxing them now. But I think it's very fair, incredibly fair, to tax businesses around a subway station. I mean, maybe you'd only tax it to the degree that their businesses go up. But, I mean, think about it. This is our public money that is helping generate this wealth. So it's certainly fair that the public agency capture some of that wealth.
Now, it seems sort of weird to be suggesting that the MTA, you know, go into the property development field. I mean, I feel like we've been hearing for a while, you know, the MTA wants to sell its real estate, wants to sell its headquarters.
Yeah, it would be a huge change in our thinking. But Hong Kong does it. Tokyo does this to a degree. They have very intensive development around their stations. The German National Railway Lines are doing this now. They made a big change a number of years ago that is starting to do this. It would be a big change, particularly for Americans. We are less used to government running businesses, but there isn't any reason that it couldn't be done. I think we do need, though, to keep our eye on the end state that we want. You know, what we want is a very robust capital program. We want very good service, and we want low fares. And I think that should not be forgotten. You know, low fares, the lower the fares, the more people use the subway and the commuter rail system, and the more service we get out of it, and really the more robust our economy is. So if development can be used to keep fares down and keep service up, you know, I think people would really get on board with that.
Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Alex Marshall, a senior fellow at the Regional Plan Association. We're talking about Hong Kong subway system versus New York. Now, what about the Port Authority? Now, the Port Authority is relatively flush compared to the MTA. So let's just talk about sort of two financial models that are very close to home. Why is it that the Port Authority doesn't seem to be in this constant revenue crisis?
Well, you know, it's really a model for the MTA. You know, it does have all this revenue stream. I mean, it's, you know, leasing out the World Trade Center for many millions of dollars a year. You know, it has the revenue from tolls. It has, you know, revenue from airports. It has a whole bunch of revenue streams and gets, I believe, no public money at all. But it is run, is meant to be run in the interest of the public. So, you know, I think it is actually a model. For the MTA to some degree.
And why is it? Is it because of the World Trade Center? Is it because it charges higher tolls?
Well, it's because it has these properties that produce revenue, you know, particularly, you know, things like the World Trade Center, a lot of the highways, the airports, the ports themselves. it has, yeah, I mean, these properties generate a lot of wealth, and it can harness those to do its job, basically.
Now, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week about the, I guess a lot of talk in certain circles about the MTA's capital plan mm-hmm. and how much debt that the MTA is looking to take on. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you get from that discussion, which clearly reflects a certain political reality. The MTA doesn't think it's going to have support from the governor or the legislature for new revenue. It doesn't want to go out and ask for fare hikes, and it doesn't want to cut service. But I'm wondering sort of how you get from the point where we are, where they're talking about huge increased debt burden, yeah. To what you're talking about, which is, you know, they're making so much money they can pay $1 million to their CEO.
Right. Yeah, it isn't something that can happen overnight. It's a long-term mission that would take, a while to change. In the short term, what the MTA needs is more money and more leadership. The debt burden is really of concern. And this, you know, basically the state should be giving the MTA more money. There's a real leadership problem. I mean, the MTA is to a degree an orphan. It's this huge transportation system, the largest in North America. And yet it's sort of like, well, who's in charge? You know, I mean, the most people probably think the Mayor Bloomberg's in charge, but, you know, it's not a city agency. It's a state agency. That was a change made in the 1960s. But, Governor Cuomo, I think it's probably fair to say he doesn't really pay it much attention. I mean, he...
Well, he certainly hasn't to date.
He's the governor of the whole state, and I think governors tend to take New York City for granted, even though it's this big wealth machine that puts billions of dollars into the state coffers. The changes I'm talking about, the MTA couldn't do them by itself. It needs some politicians to basically care about it, you know, to help oversee its future.
Well, what does the deficit deal mean for transit and in the MTA specifically?
Well, it's a long-term problem. I mean, they're taking on...
The deficit deal in Washington and the federal budget cuts. Is the MTA threatened? Are some of these projects like the Second Avenue subway threatened?
I have not heard of that directly threatening anything that's already been funded. I think a lot of the funding for the Second Avenue subway, for example, has already been set. I don't think that's... could be wrong, but I don't think that's threatening that project. It would be good, though, to see it completed sooner. I mean, I'm sure I'm like a lot of people notice, you know, China building hundreds of miles of subway lines in a few years while we take, you know, 6 or 7 years to build a few miles. If we threw a lot more money at this project, we could get it built
right.
A lot
well,
quicker.
No projects are getting a lot of money thrown at them in this particular climate. We're going to have to end it there. Thanks so much, Alex Marshall.
It's been a great pleasure, Andrew.
Senior fellow at the Regional Plan Association. Thanks so much for joining us today. When we come back, we're going to take your phone calls, and you can start calling now at 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC about your vacation rental experiences, about whether you have rented somebody else's private home that you found on Craigslist or whether you've rented out your own home. We'd like to know how that went. 212-433-9692. And we'll be talking to a travel writer about how these things tend to work. We'll be right back.